And this is part two of our first podcast. We're moving on to non-quarterbacking topics, even though that's all anyone seems to want to talk about. Mike is still with us, and Kevin is still with us, and we'll throw it to Mike first. Who else did you like out there for the blue and the white and the 2010 Nittany Lions?
Well, one guy who really impressed me was Eric Lattimore. He seems like he has really stepped up his game from last year. I mean, he was the first time I can recall looking at Eric Lattimore and actually feeling like he was a presence on the field, you know, and he wasn't playing second fiddle to Jack Crawford. In fact, I thought he looked more impressive than Crawford. So he's suddenly become a player. I'm expecting big things out of this year. And kind of sticking with the defense, I also I was really pleased with the linebacker play. And, you know, even the guys on the second team, I think they had Hodges, Van Fleet, and Jancic, or however you pronounce it, on the second team there. And, man, I would take those three guys. I thought they were just playing phenomenal there as a unit. So I'm feeling really good about the defense with the linebackers and Eric Lattimore.
It really is amazing what Ron Vander Linden gets out of the linebackers every single year, and you hear nothing about it, especially compared to even guys, position coaches like Larry Johnson Sr., who, you know, has earned his own reputation, obviously. But, oh, man, Vander Linden has got to be one of the most underappreciated coaches, certainly in the conference, if not the country. Kevin,
it's shocking he's not a head coach somewhere, really.
Well, I think he's had a few opportunities to go back to like a MAC level school. He was the coach at Maryland. A lot of people forget this now, but he was the coach at Maryland prior to Ralph Friedgen. And Ralph Friedgen made his early reputation as a head coach using Ron Vander Linden's recruits. So the guy's, he's a talented man, and we're just, you know, Penn State's very, very lucky to have him as a position coach. Kevin, who did you like out there?
Well, I mean, I was thinking on a pretty low level after the long wedding, so I was definitely ball watching the entire time. And I mean, the obvious one to me was just the running back play. I mean, Dukes looked just fun. I mean, I'm a big Tony Hunt fan. I love that clip of him after the that bowl game against Tennessee.
Well, Tony, when you needed the hard yards in the fourth quarter, you just seemed to get better with every carry. What was happening for you?
I mean, we take pride in our endurance, you know. I wasn't tired. They were worn out. We just ran the ball every play at them, you know. We got heard all that talk all week about the SEC and their speed, but we knew personally that they weren't nearly as tough as us, and, you know, it showed.
When did you start to see that on the field, that your toughness could rule the day?
Just from the beginning of the game. I never really felt like they wanted to tackle me, so, you know, we took advantage of that, especially late in the game when we just wanted to run the ball. I mean, we just ran the same play over and over. They knew we were coming, but they just couldn't match up with us.
It's a classic. I mean, the running perfectly kind of aligned with the comments he made, and it was just fun. You know, it was tough Penn State football, and I loved it. And Curtis Dukes really seems to be able to play that game. So, you know, I think, you know, with some of our other running backs, I mean, there's so many guys. Red looked great. Green, like, appeared to have a little bit of vision, a little bit of patience, which he's desperately needed for, you know, since he stepped on campus. But he's kind of my pick as the guy that I, you know, I'm pretty excited to see, you know, take on a bigger role in the offense.
I hope he can eventually turn into the short yardage back that Penn State has really needed the last few years. And for some reason, they seem to use Stephon Green in that situation more than they should. And it would be nice to have a guy Curtis Duke size, if they can trust him, because if he fumbles once or twice, his ass will be right back on that bench. Right. But it would be nice to see him grow into that role, because obviously he's not going to supplant guys like Green and Royster. As for me, I liked a lot of the young receivers. I mean, outside of Justin Brown, who I think is going to be a star very, very quickly, but even some of the younger guys like Shawnee Kersee making a few nice plays for touchdowns, and even Brandon Mosby-Felder, I thought looked good out there. Very smooth and confident, and just sort of knew what he was doing and did his job very well. Bringing the ball in like any good receiver should. You guys hit on a lot of my other ones. Gerald Hodges, I mean, he looks like the next Bowman, honestly. He has that sort of intensity and flying to the ball that Bowman had. Red and Dukes, I'd love to see what they can do in front of the first team or behind the first team offensive line. I hope that they don't have to do that this year, but I'd love to see what they can do, especially against a decent defense. As for the offensive line, can we really divine anything out of this game? I was like Kevin when I watched the replay of the game, ball watching the whole time, especially when they're rotating linemen in and out every series. Impossible to know who anybody is. I am not enough of a Penn State fan to know who every single jersey number belongs to, and I don't want to be. But can you guys get anything? I mean, did you learn anything? We saw Lattimore run around Quinn Barham a few times on the end, and I want to give Lattimore credit for that, but I hope that's not a sign of things to come when what we perceive as our second defensive end is running laps around our left tackle.
Yeah,
Mike, you go ahead with that one.
Yeah, I tried to watch the offensive line some, and you know, it's hard to keep track of really what's going on in this game because they keep shuffling guys in and out, and then you got to pay attention. Are they going up against first-team defense or second-team? What's going on? You know, I saw some positive things. They were able to open some nice holes for Silas Red there and Hakeem Brody. He had some nice runs as well. So, you know, I saw some positive things, and considering they really didn't run the ball that much, you know, they broke off a few nice runs there. So that's pretty encouraging and kind of tells me that, you know, this offensive line seems to be getting it done in the running game. Pass protection needs some work, specifically Quinn Barham out there at left tackle. You know, I wasn't sure about that move when I heard it. I didn't see anything on Saturday that makes me feel better about it. And you know, I'm kind of concerned about all this shuffling going on the offensive line this season. But, you know, all the shuffling seemed to happen at the beginning of spring, and then they just kind of kept everything there and didn't really tinker with it as the spring went on. And before you know it, here we are in the spring game, and we've gone through these whole 3 weeks with this offensive line. Well, is this going to be our line in the fall? If not, then really, have we wasted our time here? If we're just going to put Eliotti's back at guard and put Wiz back at center and Barham goes back to guard, and it's like, well, what the heck did we accomplish this spring?
Kevin, I know you said you were ball watching, as was I, and that sounds so dirty, but your general thoughts on the offensive line?
Well, I, like we had been talking about, I wasn't paying attention to the personnel, but I did. My two kind of big impressions were there did seem to be a good push on the few running plays that they ran. So it didn't seem like the line was falling apart when we would run the ball. And who knows, you know, if that's a good sign. Is that because the defense just thought we'd pass every down? Or, you know, and obviously there's limitations to the kind of schemes they're running. The passing protection did not look very good. So, and, you know, I think passing protection, especially with the kind of blocking we run, is a product of being comfortable and being cohesive. And, you know, like Mike was just talking about, there's nothing comfortable or cohesive about the shuffling that they were doing in the spring and doing in that game.
Yeah. And there was one play early in the game when Newsom was in his first or second series where Stefan Wisniewski just stood up out of his stance and had nobody to block and just sort of was looking around. And yeah, I mean, I assume because he's who he is and, you know, he's one of our best offensive linemen, that it wasn't his screw up, perhaps. It was the funniest picture. He's just standing here while Devin Still, you know, one or two gaps down the line, is just running straight at Kevin Newsom and would, you know, ordinarily be pancaking him into the ground. We can't withstand a lot of that this year. It's going to be, and I wish I go back and forth between putting my complete faith in the coaching staff because I don't know, you know, what the hell do I know? My theory is that they're just looking for the seven best guys, regardless of position, because I think they take this approach at linebacker a lot too. Looking for seven guys who can play, and from those seven, picking out positions from there, and then just, you know, telling them, okay, you need to learn this too, or you know, just, but getting them acclimated to one position. Like, I think they're trying to find out, can Doug Klopats play? Can Quinn Barham play at left tackle? And if they can't, you're going to see perhaps Eliade's bumped back out there, or I don't know, maybe Pinnell goes back out to tackle. It's just a mishmash right now, and I wish I knew what they were trying to accomplish, and that makes me think that I'm just not smart enough to know what they're trying to accomplish.
Nothing but sunshine. It's all sunshine. It's 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 nothing but sunshine.
I saw a punting display from none other than our Lord and Savior of Black Shoe Diaries, Graham Zug. Is that what it's going to be reduced to this year? If Russell Nye, the walk-on transfer from Temple, whose father I believe is the golf coach at Penn State, unless that kid can get the job back, or does Anthony Farrah put down the bottle of mango rum and come back and, you know, I mean, we haven't seen Anthony Farrah kick anything either yet. You know, he didn't play it all last year. He didn't play it all in the spring. What do we do with this, Kevin? Please help me.
I mean, there was nothing more disgusting in the game to me than just the line drive kind of shanking punting style that we saw. I mean, that's going to, I mean, we obviously all watched the Ohio State game in horror. And I mean, the field position, the punting just ended that game before the defense had a chance to settle in, before the offense had a chance to kind of get going. I mean, when you're going to punt the ball 30 yards, line drive, and let the guy run it back 10 or 15 yards. I mean, obviously there were no returns, and they completely strip away all of the kicking game. But I mean, to me, this is the biggest problem on the team right now. I mean, I think with all these quarterbacks, somebody's going to shake out. We're completely loaded on defense, running back, wide receiver. But I mean, when you're giving up 20, 30 yards a possession change in, you know, these games against Iowa and Ohio State are going to be, are, you know, the classic kind of grind them out with the defense games. I just don't see
they're never shootouts. Not lately.
No, definitely aren't.
Mike, what do you do about special teams? And even, I mean, Colin Wagner hit a 46-yard field goal, which was, you know, there's no rush, but that's nice to see. What do you think about the state of special teams as we head out of spring practice?
Yeah, it was good to see Wagner hit that field goal. I think that might have been his career long. I don't think he hit one. I think he maybe hit one over 40 yards last season, but
and everybody was equally shocked then too.
Yeah.
it just never looks like it's gonna get there, does it?
Yeah, I mean I just look at this team and I scratch my head and I wonder, how can we suck so bad on special teams year in and year out, and they don't change anything? You know, we still have, I think, like Larry Johnson does the kickoffs, and I don't know, Bugs does the punting game or something. I mean, it's just this, you know, it's just kind of an afterthought, something they do on the side, and oh, we'll let the true freshmen go out there and run around and do it. And, you know, and it's such an important part of the game, because you're talking about swinging the field position 40 or 50 yards at a time, you know, and if you have a punter shank it off his foot, now you've just given the other team good field position, or if he hits a line drive and your coverage isn't there and somebody blows their assignment, now you've given up a big return. I mean, it's such a momentum swing. You know, special teams can ignite a team and put them in position. They can get a score and get you down. And, you know, I just don't understand why, you know, when you look at this, the way this staff is structured, and we've got, you know, Galen Hall calling the running plays and Jay calling the passing plays, and then we've got, you know, we need Bill Kenny coaching the, I think he does the tackles and tight ends, and Anderson's doing the centers and guards. It's like, why don't we have just one offensive line coach and then get a special teams coach to the coach all the other stuff? I don't know. I mean, I've been scratching my head over this for years. It seems like, you know, special teams is such an important part of the game. I can't believe they don't have a a coach dedicated to nothing but special teams.
What's your opinion of Drew Astorino sitting under a punt and waving his hand wildly above his head?
I hate it. Absolutely hate it. You know, and they put Graham Zug back there. I'm thinking, okay, well, here's somebody. Maybe he can return. No, same thing.
He fumbled two of them in the same game.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, maybe a kid's going to – I'd love to see him put, like, a Davon Smith back there or a Stephon Green. And, you know, okay, maybe they fumble once or twice, you know. But, you know, the potential trade-off is, you know, more times than not, they're going to gain you – if they can gain you an extra 10 or 15 yards – you know, or even break one occasionally, I'm willing to take the occasional muffed punt, you know, especially when your defense is as good as they are.
Yeah, I mean, this team with its offense that looks like it's going to be at least somewhat limited in its options and its attacking options, they're really going to need to play good special teams and good defense. Good defense, we're going to just assume that that's going to be okay. The special teams, I mean, you look at the numbers. I checked them right before we started recording the previous podcast. Net punting last year, number 114 in the country. Punt return defense, number 117. And we saw that just cause, I mean, just chaos out there for Penn State, especially during that Ohio State game. But the previous year in 2008, net punting, number 11. Punt return yardage, defense, number 15. So I don't know. Was it the punter last year? Was it the coverage? Was it I don't know. I don't know where those they can't. I know they're not terrible all the time, and I wonder sometimes if special teams is just sort of more random than we give it credit for, or I don't know. I'm not really sure what to make of the numbers, other than it's sort of easy to go on what you see and what you remember. And you know that sort of empirical evidence is just you see Ray Small running a punt back close to the Penn State goal line, and you know that turns around a game like that. And Penn State just isn't willing to take chances with their punt returners. And that's you know I remember Bruce Branch running back touchdowns. You know, it's happened before. I know Penn State at some point in its history has run back a punt for a touchdown.
I mean, we used to put guys like Bobby Engram back there, O.J. McDuffie. You know, now we're putting Drew Astorino. Yeah. You know,
Grant right? And Derek Williams. Derek Williams was great at it. He turned around that Notre Dame game in 2007. I'm guessing on that one. I think it was 07.
Williams got a block. Great cut. He's got a roll.
You know, the same thing with the Illinois game that year. We is there nobody on this team that can handle the job? I guess is my question. And there has to be somebody. Go ahead, Kevin.
I just think it's turnover aversion to, you know, a destructive kind of level is where I think we're
at. Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it is.
I don't know how, I mean, I don't know how some of these guys are able to kind of gain that trust. I mean, Williams used to muff punts all the time from what I remember.
All the time.
And, you know, at that Notre Dame one that you're talking about, I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this right, he dropped it and it bounced around for a second or two before he picked it up and ran it back.
Yeah. I mean, he plucked it right off the ground.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that Williams had these, you know, these sure hands or anything like that. So I don't know what the deal is either. I mean, we have so many.
You know what Williams was really good at though? Sometimes he'd on a short punt, he'd run up and remember he would dive after the ball and catch it and fall on his stomach. And we all go like, what the hell is he doing? He's going to muff the punt. But when you think about it, how many punts, if he had let that go, it would have rolled.
Saving 20 yards.
50 yards, you know? I mean, I think it was unappreciated how good he was at catching the ball a lot of times.
Even if that's a concern, you can put two guys back, put a safety back, and then have your punt, you know, quote unquote punt returner, whether that's Devon Smith or Justin Brown. I know caught a few towards the end of last year. Find someone who can do the job. You have a million talented wide receivers on this team. They're not all going to play. Take one or two of them aside and just do nothing but launch punts at them. Punters need to practice anyway. Let's you know, use a little cooperation here. They all need the work.
Let's not forget there's 10 other guys on the field too. You know, and I think a lot of our problems last year were personnel related in the other 10 guys on the field. You know, if you think back to 2 years ago, we had, you know, Nate Stupar was a freaking wrecking ball on kickoffs and punts and you know, and this last year he had the ankle issue, and you know, we also had Brandon Beecham on special teams 2 years ago, and he threw a lot of key blocks on some of those Derek Williams long returns, you know. And
yes, he did.
Last year they took him off, you know, and last year you looked around like, who's out there? You know, and you're seeing guys like Joe Suey and Van Fleet, and you know, like, and it's like, what the heck are we doing here? You know, are we taking the special teams seriously, or are we just gonna put the walk on freshman out there and let him handle it, you know?
Well, it's something they're definitely going to have to figure out, and you know, we'll debate the need of a special teams coach endlessly. You're not, you know, we're not going to see one until the next coaching regime comes in, and whoever that is, whether it's in house or from the great beyond in the coaching world. Just to wrap this up, what did you think of the ESPN coverage? ESPN simply even coming to town to cover the blue-white game. Kevin, well, you can start on that one.
Okay. I thought it was great that they were there. I mean, you're getting much better quality. The guys weren't, I don't know if it's because they didn't need to be as dramatic, but I didn't mind the guys in the booth. And I thought that the Paterno interview was just excellent. I mean, it was the highlight of the whole thing for me. It was funny. It was, they weren't rushing him out of the booth because they had to run a commercial or anything like that. So, I mean, I would, you know, we complain about ESPN all the time, and that's kind of part of being a football fan, I think. But I have nothing to complain about on the broadcast. Mike, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I thought the broadcast was very well done. It's pretty neat to have ESPN come up and broadcast your spring game like that, and you can't top Paterno in the booth. I mean, that's classic. I wish they would have had more of them. I think their original plan was to have them for the entire second quarter there, but Paterno kind of waved them off the first half of the quarter, I think, and they only got them for the last 5 minutes or so there. But man, I wish we could have more of Paterno. I miss the old broadcast where Paterno was in the booth the entire game. Man, I wish they would go back to that. But as far as the Penn State commercials, I was coaching my kid's soccer game when the game was going on, so I DVR'd it, and I just flipped right through all the commercials. But man, it sure seemed like there was a lot of them.
There were a lot of them, and I'll give Penn State credit, because I used to endlessly just rip on those, that come on, jump in, that one. Oh God, it made me want to burn my diploma anytime I heard it. And it's just the most awful thing. And they really did a nice job with these newest promos. They're all about a minute long. Most of them are for the new funding drive that they're doing up there. But there have been other Penn State videos that have come out recently, and they've really stepped up the production value on those. As far as ESPN coming to town, it's nice to see Penn State being one of those schools that sort of reaches out and gets attention from not just ESPN, because you know, we focus on ESPN all the time because you know, they're our main provider of college football, especially if you're a Big Ten fan. But I'm sorry, Big Ten Network. But it's just one of those things that Penn State used to be so secretive and so just not interested in national media. And it's nice to see them doing something that gets them on TV for 2 hours, not only promotes the football program, but the university and the town. And it's good to see them finally realizing the power of that. And did it keep attendance down? Maybe. I mean, there was rain in the forecast as well. I think that kept some people away. It was actually quite nice up there. We got into town around 9 o'clock in the morning, had a solid 4 hours of sunshine before the clouds started rolling in. By that time, we were in the car and going back down to Harrisburg. And I don't think Joe Paterno ever made it onto the radio broadcast. And as Mike was saying, that was one of the sort of great traditions of the Blue White game, is him just being up there and, you know, telling ridiculous stories about Brooklyn and harassing the other announcers. And I know, I'm sure it's not the same without his brother and Fran Fischer up there, but it'd be nice to hear that. I believe one of our commenters, Dairy Farmer, said that he was at Joe's house during the second half of the game, and Paterno was there waiting for him. So, you know, maybe he just doesn't have the feel the need to be part of the broadcast anymore. And, you know, when you're 83 years old and you've won more games than anybody else, you're allowed to take some time off every once in a while. That wraps it up for us. This is another 25 minutes of rambling from myself and Mike and Kevin. We'll wrap this one up and see you next time on the Black Shoe Diaries podcast. After that confrontation, you left me ringing.